Welcome, welcome. Oh my goodness. We have another episode of The Rational Revolution. I am your fearless host here, Mark Becker. Last episode before Thanksgiving. We're going to talk at the end of the show. I have some to don'ts of Thanksgiving. The coach Mark will come back and we'll talk about some of that stuff. But I want to, this is a really important episode, I think. And I'm going to set it up like this. I was reading an article. It was a Substack article, and we'll post it to our civic media page as well. And it was really eye-opening. The year was 1930. United States was beginning the Great Depression. People were angry. People were upset and poor, and they were looking for someone to blame. The second worst president in U.S. history, Herbert Hoover, they gave him someone to blame. And in a tale as old as time, he decided to blame people who didn't look like white people. So he blamed people who are of Mexican descent and enacted a years-long program that was labeled American Jobs for Real Americans. And more than 1.8 million people were sent back to Mexico. I had no idea about this. It was staggering. And it was a heartbreaking statistic that I learned from this article that nearly half of those people who were deported were actually U.S. citizens. And so now here we are almost 100 years later, and we're talking about this again. I really want to encourage people to read that article because it really is an eye-opening and kind of mind-boggling thing. And here to talk about that is the guy who wrote it. He's an expert in the subject of Latino history, amongst many, many other things. He's a political strategist, co-founder of the Lincoln Project. He's a successful author whose book, The Latino Century, How America's Largest Minority is Transforming Democracy. It is available everywhere books are sold. He is an all-around good guy, friend of the show. Mr. Mike Madrid joins me here.
Mark, so great to be with you again. Love doing the show.
Thank you so much for coming back. I really appreciate it. And how the heck have you been?
Well, it's been a bumpy run, as it's been for you and for everybody else. You know, this is the first time in 30 years that I haven't been on a big campaign.
Yes.
I was doing the book tour, and I got to tell you, a book tour is just as tough or tougher than a campaign. And maybe that's a function of I'm just getting a little bit older, but I'm glad to get a little bit of rest, and it hasn't been long. We're right back at it, but it's been a bumpy ride.
How many places did you hit? Like, where did you all go?
Oh, good. I mean, I was all over the country. I mean, it was everywhere from the Kennedy Library doing events to
That's
Austin,
awesome.
Texas doing events to, you know, California, Arizona, Nevada, just bouncing around everywhere. So I'm not even sure how many we've done, just tons of them.
Well, so your calendar is not your own, as I found out. That's so cool. Kennedy Library, we were just there this summer. Beautiful place. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah,
great. They've got that Senate, you know, they've got a wing of it for the Ted Kennedy Institute, which is literally a perfect replica of the floor of the Senate. And that's actually where we did the event.
Oh, that's so cool. Really? That's neat. So I have you here because I want to talk about what people need to know about the proposal of, you know, this mass deportation and everything. But I'd like to start with this. Since you were here last, a couple things have happened.
Yeah.
So it was specifically in November. What happened?
Well, look, there's a couple of things that I think that offer a lot of keen insight here. And the first is, as we're finalizing a lot of the vote counts, I want people to remember that this was not that, you know, the early reactions are always much more different than when you get the final data in. This was a really, really close election.
Really?
Donald Trump is going to actually end up, you know, winning by less than winning the popular vote, which is peculiar. It is peculiar for a Republican to be able to win the popular vote, but he's going to lose it by a smaller margin than Hillary Clinton won.
Huh.
And the margin in those three states is sitting at less than 100,000. So it looks very much like the Hillary Clinton race versus Donald Trump in 2016, much more obviously than the 2020 race. But this idea that somehow this was, you know, this massive shift, at least from a partisan perspective, doesn't seem to have much weight in fact. Now, having said that, virtually every group in the country did move to the right. But when we're talking about moving to the right, we're talking oftentimes marginally, you know, a couple points here, a couple points there. which leads most of us to believe that it just probably had something to do with more about the dynamics of the current economy and political environment than it did some massive political realignment.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I suppose. So, and you know, but if you, the Republicans don't like facts that much these days. And so they'll talk about, you know, we're governing on a mandate and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no question about that. That'll be part of the strategy. Like I said, a small margin of victory, a big margin of victory, I mean, the end result is the same. Nobody's contesting that. And perhaps, moreover, more uncomfortably, they're going to hit the gas full steam and kind of head in the direction they want to go.
So what do the Dems have to do? I mean, like, what's the play for them?
And again, even though this loss was relatively small, I think it's important to put in the context of the past decade. Again, and this is kind of why I wrote the book, and we talked about this. The Democratic Party is no longer the party of the working class. Hmm. And they just are going to either have to come to terms with that and recognize that in order to fix it, or they can continue to sort of deny it and keep having these elections where these types of things happen, a 2016 event or a 2024 event, with, you know, a 2020 kind of saving them in the middle. There is a realignment that is happening that is happening along class lines, but it's happening incrementally, but over a decade, 12 years really, those incremental two-point margins start to get bigger and bigger and bigger when they compound, and now you're starting to see the Democratic Party, I think, starting to reel a little bit and recognize maybe we're not the party that we thought we were.
Can they get that back?
Oh, for sure. 100%. Of course they can. Yeah, there's nothing permanent about this. Like I said, they've got to be serious about it. They've got to be committed to it. They can't ignore it. They can't deny it. But this system, this two-party system, does have a remarkably resilient way of bouncing back and forth. I mean, just weeks before the election, everybody was saying about how much Donald Trump had essentially destroyed it and got it out the Republican Party.
Yes.
Could it ever come back? So, yeah, look, there's a lot of over-dramatization in politics. That's why we kind of like it. That's why we get a little addicted to it. That's why we stay focused on it. Yeah. And I'm not trying to diminish the reality of the moment, but to suggest anything other than, yes, of course, it's completely fixable. It's completely reconcilable. There was no doubt that this will be, you know, competitive going forward. Every presidential campaign since the year 2000 has been very, very competitive. There's no evidence to suggest that that's changed at all.
You know, and I, and on the other side, it was the day after the election, I text messaged another friend of the show, Joe Walsh, and I was like, okay, well, now what? And he said, his response was, well, I guess we're pretty much all Democrats now. You know, so is the GOP gone?
That is interesting that would come from Joe, who's a dear friend and a really bright mind and a great, great man.
He's a good guy,
I'm not sure. That seems to make sense. The whole idea of the Never Trump movement, the resistance movement, there's no question it essentially died. The truth of the matter is there were never that many of us. Like you said, when you can mention a name like Joe, and we all know each other. Like, it's that small.
Right.
And that's a sign of a number of different things we can get into probably at a later date. But to the question at hand, which is, what does that mean for the GOP? What it means is it's Trump's party. It's a populist nationalist movement led by this individual who is going to take it wherever he wants to go and will have overwhelming compliance with that. Mm. So, I guess a lot of folks are going to be more engaged as Democrats, as Joe Walsh would be. The Democratic Party has asserted itself as the party that is going to defend the United States Constitution and classical liberalism. There's a lot more that us as conservatives, traditional conservatives, have in common with the Democratic Party than with a populist nationalist movement. I remain a registered Republican. Maybe I'll change, maybe I won't. I don't believe that I will be involved in partisan politics much anymore. I'll just be kind of doing more of the observing and pointing out what's happening to our body politic at kind of the 30,000 foot level.
Yeah, one of the things that I think is cool as we talk to Mike Madrid is that you have always been someone who has had such a strong moral compass. Like, you have worked for Democrats and you helped them.
Uh-huh.
You've helped Republicans.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because at the center of everything that you do and it did and all of that has always been your love for the country and just you want to do the right thing. Which that's pretty badass. I mean, that's awesome.
I suppose, but to me, it seems sort of commonsensical. Like, I really, really do love my country. Yeah. I love this country. What it's built, what it's been, what it claims to stand for, if not stand for, the fact that it fails in trying to be a better country consistently, but keeps getting up and doing the right thing. Like, that's the virtue of a people. That is literally, it's not in accomplishing it. It's in fighting for it and struggling for it. That's the beauty of this country. That's the beauty of this human story. And to me, the parties, for most people, their partisan identification is as strong or stronger than religion.
Yep.
For me, it's never been that way. They have been tools to build a better America. And whichever one happens to be doing the right thing at the right time towards that end is a party or a candidate that I'm going to stand behind. And obviously at this moment, that's not the Republican Party. Right. This may sound very, very strange to a lot of people. I'm extremely optimistic about where we're heading as a country.
Yeah.
And you and I have had these conversations before.
Yep.
A good, virtuous, strong people and national character is built through struggle, only through struggle.
Yes.
And it's about the fight. The fight for what we believe in is what instills that character, and that's what we're going through right now.
Yeah, I think we're going to, as a country, have a pretty big snapback here. And I have one more question on this before we kind of get into, the meat of our discussion, the appointments, we've seen, does he take it seriously? Right. I mean, some of these, it's just like, he's appointing these people because he wants to own the libs. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But you also have to remember that loyalty has always been the number one test case for Donald Trump, right? Like it's not. He has no political ideology, and I don't mean that in a pejorative sense. He literally does not. He's just transactional. To him, this is not, the Oval Office is not held in great esteem or reverence the way you or I do. To him, it's kind of like a business transaction.
Right.
Okay, well, now I'm president. What do we do? How do we get the most out of it? How do we get the most advantage? And what he realized very quickly, and I think especially through the January 6th stuff last time, was loyalty is what he demands. Yeah. It's not what your belief is. It's not who's going to do the best job. It's who's going to be the most loyal. And in 2016, it was a different scenario. He was learning the job. He tried to surround himself with people that had some core competency. He's not concerned about that at all now. They're not concerned about governing in the way that we traditionally view governance.
Right on.
As long as you're loyal, that's all that matters.
Yeah, we got Mike Madrid here on the Rational Revolution. We'll see you right back after the break.